Wednesday the 4th of November, Yud Zayin Ma'ar Cheshvan, Rabbi Yehoshua of Hosen, Halacha Series, series Halacha in the Workplace, Part 7, Question and Answers on Hilchos Ribis.
Morning. We, Baruch Hashem, have finished the series on Ribis, five shurim we had on Ribis, and because we can never do justice to Hilchos Ribis by cramming it, so to speak, into five shurim, so I wanted to have today with a few of the questions that have come up from most of the questions I think are from people here. It's kedai to go through, and maybe when people hear the questions and the answers, they might trigger other thoughts. The first question, I think, is really a natural progression of one of the shurim we had here. I think it was Ribis Part C, where we mentioned the problem and we didn't have time to go into the solution. The question is, what happens in the case we mentioned that if a parent buys a property for a child, because the child and the parent buys the property, it's in the parent's name, and we said that if in fact there's a contract or shtar saying that really the property belongs to the son, then there's a serious ribis issue, because really the father has borrowed the money from the bank, he's lent on that money to his child, and the child is paying interest that really the father owes the bank. So ultimately what happens is there's two stages. The father's borrowed money from the bank, which he now owes interest on. He then lends that money to his son so that his son can buy a house. And his son is paying the father's interest bills. So just like if you borrow money from Yid, you're not allowed to pay him back the money together with paying his electricity bill. Similarly to here, the son's not allowed to pay back the money and pay the father's interest bill in the bank. So therefore, one has to come up with a way of solving this issue. We mentioned that in most matters of ribis, heter iska is often used to solve the problem, but we had a whole show on heter iska where we understood a little bit more what heter iska is and how it works, and we realized that heter iska does have its limitations, and particularly in a setup like this between a father and son, where more often than not the reason that the son is not buying the property in his own name is because he hasn't worked his way up the rungs in order to be a successful businessman with his own proper salary, etc. So in such a case, then we have a situation where if the father knows that his son doesn't have any other investments, all he has is this property, and he knows what's going on with this property, then there are serious doubts about using a heter iska. So the question that was asked is, so what should one do in such a case? Reb Moshe Feinstein, Igus Moshe Yerodei Chelik Beis, Simon Samach Beis, answers this kasha. He comes up with a very simple concept how to get around this problem. What is this problem caused by? It's caused by the fact that the father has borrowed money and he's lending money to his son. And because he's lending money to his son, that by definition is a halvor. And on a halvor there's a problem of ribis. If we can take that halvor out of the equation, then obviously we're not going to have any problem of ribis. So let's put in some numbers here. Let's say a property costs £500,000, and the son's got the money for the down payment, either he's got it himself or someone's given it to his parent, gave it to him as a present. That's not relevant. So he's got, let's say the down payment is 20%, so he's got £100,000 himself to put down for the down payment, but he needs a mortgage for 80% to provide him with the £400,000. So what was going to happen prior to this being an issue, is the father is going to take out a mortgage for 80%, get £400,000 from the bank. Really, he was, so to speak, lending that to his son because the property really belongs to his son. So he's giving it to his son to buy the property. And that's where the problems start. Instead, says Reb Moshe, what you do is like this. We draw up a contract that says that this property is owned b'shutvus. It's owned in partnership. 20% is owned by the son because he is the one who's bringing the down payment. The other 80% is owned by the father. The father does not pass on this £400,000 to the son. He uses this £400,000, which he's borrowed from the bank, to buy 80% of this property. It's now owned, b'shutvus, 80%, 20%. Since, hold on a second, there's a few points, and then we'll see if there's any issues. Since the son is the meister going to be living in this house, so he is using a property of which 80% is owned by his father, so his father is entitled to charge him rent. How much rent does he charge him? So rent, you can charge what you like. You can make up the funniest figures. You can say every month's rent is going to be what my parking car bill is. Forgetting problems of asmachta. But Be'etzem, rent has got nothing to do with ribis. There's no halvor whatsoever. The father has not lent the son a penny. The down payment belonged to the son. All the money which the father borrows from the bank, he is investing into this house, and he now owns 80%. The father therefore can charge the son, he can tell the son, I want you to pay me rent. How much is rent? However much, I have to pay the bank on the money which I borrowed. But that's not a problem. The son's not paying interest that the father owes. The son is paying rent. The amount that the rent is fixed happens to be according to the father's personal arrangement with the bank. Now, you're probably all wondering that this setup is flawed from the beginning, because it's missing a fundamental point. Why in the first place is the son buying a property? Why doesn't he just rent? There it is. Why do people buy property? Because a few years ago people thought if you buy property it's going to go up in value. And if it goes up in value, then in the long run they're going to have the benefits of the positive equity in the property. So therefore here, there's obviously a flaw. You buy a property for 500,000, you hope it's going to go up to 600,000. 80% of that gain, £80,000 of that gain, is going to belong to the father. Because he owns 80% of the house. So the son is missing out on the proportion, the main reason why he's buying this property. Therefore, says Rav Moshe, as with any other partnership, one can put in certain clauses, and we've mentioned before different times that people can be mischayev themselves different things. The father, as the 80% shareholder, is mechayev himself that whenever the son wants to buy him out of his 80% shareholding, he will sell his 80% of shares at 400,000, irrelevant of the market rate at that time. Right? So again, the father buys 80% for 400,000 from the bank. Now normally, his 80% goes up in value together with the house, so he's going to benefit. Here, we're not saying his 80% hasn't gone up in value, but we're saying he has obliged himself with a proper kinyan, kedasa kedin, he's obliged himself that whenever the son wants to buy him out, the son can buy him out of his full 80% at the 400,000 fixed price. So therefore it doesn't make a difference if the property goes up in value or down in value. If someone wants to buy him out, he's going to buy him out at that 400,000. We can put in a clause as well. You don't have to have this, but sometimes the parent will get concerned that what happens if I need the money now? What happens if the bank come to me, they want me to pay up the loan? And if it's a shutus here, then I can't force my son to buy me out. So sometimes you can put in as well a clause the other way around, that whenever the father wants to sell his 80% of shares, then the son has to buy him out at the 400,000. But we've really created potentially a ribbis problem here. Right? We're trying to get around the problem of ribbis. We've potentially created a ribbis problem. Why? Because if you say, I'm giving, this, the father is putting £400,000 into this house, but you're telling him, no matter what, whether I want or whether he wants, he'll always only get back 400,000. So that already sounds like a loan. What's happened here? He's putting the money to the house. The house goes up in value. He's not going to get a penny more. Not if he wants, not if I want, nothing. Whatever happens, he's only going to get his £400,000. So to get around that problem, we drive home the truth. The truth in this arrangement is that the father owns 80% of the house. So for example, if Chas Hashem, this house was to burn to the ground and it wouldn't be insured, then the father would lose his money. The son would have no obligation whatsoever to pay him back any of the 400,000, and he would be indebted to the bank, the £400,000. Because it is a shutus. Hitaka owns 80% of the property, and therefore, we'll write in the contract, which from a legal point of view is not necessary in any case, we'll write in the contract that the father has to make sure that the property is insured. Now, legally, why did I say that's not necessary? Because the property is registered in the father's name in any case. So he's probably going to be the one who's insuring the property either way. But that's not neither here nor there. The fact is that the liability on the insurance, for at least 80% of it, is on the father. Now, if he doesn't want to lose out by that, he can make the rent equal to how much interest he has to pay past how much the insurance is. Because in the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with charging the rent, whatever fee you like, because there's no halvor here whatsoever.
Who thought this up? The consequences are so terrible and so undesirable.
Why, what consequences?
All sorts of consequences. Who owns it? Vows of Makatonim. It's an impossible thing to begin with. If the money is borrowed from the bank, the son is paying the interest directly to the bank.
Right.
The father, in point of fact, doesn't exist.
You're questioning the whole halacha in the first place.
Yes.
Not the ramifications of it.
No, that's questioning the whole need for it.
No, the need to it is huge. The need to it is, without coming up with such a solution, you're facing a very real situation, which, let me tell you, is happening across the board in many different places. You're facing a very real situation where every single month, the monthly payment that's made by the son is properly ribbis deraisa. Which means, just to ram home the point, which means that theoretically one day the son could turn around and say to the father, you have to pay me back all the interest payments I made. In theory.
It seems much less of a drain
than when it's rent. No, we're now making rent. He's talking about why do we need, what's the problem in the first place?
Unless if it's rent, it's okay.
The rent, it's fine. There's no half at all. I understand the way you perceive it, which is normally the way one perceives it before one gets to the Shulchan Aruch, is that the father's doing a favor for the son. You know, it's the son borrowing the money. But in the end of the day, as we mentioned in the Shir, if the father is the one who signs personal liability, he has borrowed the money. The son's not borrowed the money. You can't come to the son for a penny. The bank don't know the son exists. Even if they knew the son exists, legally they wouldn't have a penny on him. So that means, even legally, the halvah is purely only to the father. Now, if they have a separate contract, never mind Shtar, you can have a legal contract which is not registered, which says that even though in the land registry this property is owned by the father, really he has transferred ownership to the son. It's 100% legal, there's nothing wrong with it. If you have such a contract, that means the son has now the owner of the property. Now the father hasn't given that property for free, he wants that money to be repaid. That means that even legally, forget halacha for a second, take Shulchan Aruch out of the equation. If you ask a lawyer to talk you through what's happened here, he will tell you that a bank has lent money to the father, and only the father. The father has then lent on that money to his son. Now, you put in halacha and says, in such a situation, if the father has lent money to the son, how can the son pay extra more than he's borrowed? So that's why we have to come up with this situation. Just, agav, we, Chas V'Shalom, we never medama ourselves to Achinu Bnei Yishmol, but we know that many of their halachas come originally from us. They actually have such a setup. It's called a Sharia mortgage. Really, because they hold, they've got a problem of ribbis and they have a problem with mortgages, they've come up with such a similar approach as well. Akapon. Moving on to the second question. Second question is somewhat more simple, but there is a very important yisoid that comes out from this question. The question is like this. We won't get involved in the health and hygiene point of view of this shaila, but Reuven lends his chip fryer, empty chip fryer, to his neighbor. And his neighbor uses the chip fryer and returns it full of oil. Still with the oil in it now. Reuven is someone himself who normally would reuse the oil many times, and that's why I say I'm not getting involved whether that's hygienically correct or not. That's not my issue. I leave that to other people. But he normally would reuse the oil many times, and it's worth money to him. In this particular time, the chip fryer was free. So Shimon, who put in fresh bottles of oil into the chip fryer, would do his shochan a favor. He returns it still with the oil. Now Reuven's very happy to use this oil, but now he thought, well, maybe I've got a problem with ribbis here. Right, I lent him a chip fire. He's giving me back a chip fire plus oil. Is that problem with ribbis? That was the shaila. Now, the answer is very simple. The answer is very simple, that there's absolutely no problem whatsoever.
You have him a gift.
Yeah, but if I borrow from you £1,000 and I give you back £1,000 with a gift, I'm over on ribbis deraisa. If that gift was fixed in the beginning. If it wasn't fixed in the beginning, ribbis rabbanan.
Oil and chip fryer, two categories.
So I borrow from you £1,000 and I give you back a chip fryer. I'm also over on Ubis travel. That's not the nekuda. So let's be clear. Let's be clear. The reason why it's not is because the person asking the question is speaking English instead of Lashon HaKodesh. Right? In English, I can lend you £10, I can lend you a packet of sugar, and I can lend you a chip fryer. And they're all same word, lend. In Lashon HaKodesh, there are two different words. One is She'ela, and one is Halvo. What is the difference between She'ela and Halvo? Very simple. She'ela is where the item which I borrow is the item which I return. Right? So I borrow someone's scissors, I borrow someone's chip fryer, the item I borrow is the same item I give back. That is She'ela. Halvo, the item which I borrow, I use, and I replace it with an identical item. So for example, I borrow £1,000, I don't give back those notes because that's why I'm borrowing it. Milvul Hotzla, I borrow the money, I use the money, I return another £1,000. I borrow a packet of sugar from my neighbor, I use the packet of sugar, and I return a different packet of sugar. That is halvor. Ribbis is only ever a problem when it comes to halvor. Ribbis has got nothing to do with she'ela. In fact, there's a word for borrowing through she'ela an item and giving back more. It's called schius. It's called rent. Right? If I borrow my neighbor's lawnmower, and I give it back, and I give it back together with a box of chocolates, so I've done she'ela on the Normally, she'ela means I borrow something for free. If I give it back with a box of chocolates, so I've so to speak rented, although I haven't paid money, I've so to speak rented his luma. Right? There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. So therefore, in the case of the chip fire, I'm borrowing a chip fire, I'm giving back a chip fire, the same his chip fire, that is she'ela. If he wants to give it back to me with oil, very nice. I'm very happy to have an extra, maybe he's changed it from she'ela to skewers, but there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Now this...
you say the same with the car with the tank of petrol?
Oh, now here, this shayla is much more nagia to most of you here, not so much by chip fryers, but more what happens in a case where I borrow a car with half a tank of petrol, and I use the half a tank, and when I come to fill it up, I say, well, yeah, I'm going to fill it up to punt half. It's not very nice. So I fill up the whole tank. I give him back the car with a full tank. Is there a problem here or not? Now, here you have both. You have, so to speak, a she'ela and a halvo. The car which I borrow is the car which I return. That's a she'ela. The petrol, half a tank which I use, which you don't ever think about, is I use it up and I replace it. That's halvo. So on the surface, one might think, no, there should be a problem here. One has to really make sure one gets it bang on. And without getting involved in complications here, but we mentioned in Shir, Sobasob, one might think even there's a problem even in returning it even half. I borrow half and return half. But let's leave that out for a moment. The reason why it's not a problem, you'll be relieved to know, the Mishnah Sribis Paskins, it's not a problem for the very simple reason that it's posher to everyone. That the reason why you're giving back more petrol is not because you borrowed his petrol, it's because you borrowed his car. Right, he did you a favor, he lent you his car, and for that you're in return giving him extra petrol. Now since borrowing a car, even though it's called borrowing, is she'ela, but you're giving back the same car, therefore there's nothing wrong whatsoever with giving him a present for lending you his car. Maybe that would be called, so to speak, partially renting his car, but that's neither here nor there, and therefore there's nothing wrong with filling up the tank. Question number 3.
To take a packet of sugar.
Packet of sugar is definitely a problem. If you borrow a packet of sugar and give back extra, let's say you borrow a 750 liter bottle of water, a milliliter bottle of water, and return a liter. That's ribbis. It's about ribbis.
Once heard that if it's in business, you're not to give it back. If you just borrow it to a neighbor.
Depending on what.
But packet of sugar neighbor, you don't count weight.
Yes and no. If it's clear that it's mamash a different size, maybe like Moshe, if you borrow a small challah, you give back a challah that you've made that might be a bit bigger or whatever, already there's room to be marked. But if you're talking about things which come in official sizes, you've got a 750 bottle, there's a litre bottle, and you're giving a completely different size, that's more of a problem.
You've got a starter pack of sugar, when you give back a full pack of
that's already different. It's worth asking a shayla on those points. With things that you're lending, which are being returned, a different product, different, not the actual item, then each case, really, I can't give a cloud, each case is different.
Is there such a thing of doing work for someone and you've got an agreement, you do this for me and then we'll do it for you as well, but if
yes.
The other work is more,
yes, that's the Gemara, if I'll work for you and you work back for me, if there's a difference in the works, there's a problem with ribbis.
There's a ribbis.
Yeah.
Why is it not as maybe in a category of Sherlock?
Again, because when I do work for you, you're not returning my work. You're giving me something else as payment. Right? So you're giving me something else in return.
So if I'm asking someone to help me to build my sukkah,
that's
and his sukkah is harder than mine,
yeah, that's a problem.
I'm doing it.
That's a problem. Yeah, uh-huh. Unless it would be clear that you do it as a favor, nothing to do with because he did yours. Just I'm happy to help him.
So it's bartering.
Bartering is not a problem if you do it on the spot. That's a mechamemke. If I do something for you today and you do something in return later, that can become more of a problem. Let's move on. Question number 3. Now this is Givaldi, this Shaila. It was Kedai for the whole Torah way to have been started and finished, may not finish, but for this Shaila alone, Beligosma. Somebody here in the Torah way borrowed £100,000 from a friend. Slight details have been changed. I didn't say the friend is in the Torah way. He needed £100,000 for a business transaction. He borrowed £100,000 from his friend. Now his friend borrowed the money from the bank. Thereby, obviously there's going to be interest charge. So the arrangement was very simple. You're borrowing £100,000 for a year. At the end of the year you pay me back £100,000 plus the £7,000 interest which I'm going to have to pay my bank. Right? Everything was fine. The friend, the person who borrowed the money, Reuven, let's call him, was very happy with this arrangement until he came to the shir and discovered that there's a problem here. Now he's holding now at the end of the year. He's meant to pay back £100,000 plus £7,000. And now he's come to the shir and we've caused problems. Right? Because now he realizes that he's not allowed to give back the £7,000. In fact, to give back the £7,000, I'm not saying he's in the room at the moment, to give back the £7,000 would be ribbis d'oraisa. Right? So that means that even if he'd give it back, up in halacha, the person would have to return it. But he says to me, I've got a problem now. What am I meant to do? This person's done me a favor in good faith. Right? He stands nothing to gain from it. He's taken out money, fakir, he's only had aggravation now. He's taken out money from the bank. He's got £7,000 now, that loss. I just returned £100,000. He's going to lose £7,000 because he did me a favor. That's basically what I'm telling him. So his question is very simple. Can I help? Is there anything we can come up with that can help him from this problem which, so to speak, I've created? Right? So can we help him? Now, the answer is very simple. If the person who's lent him the money needs the money back today, there's absolutely nothing you can do. You have to give him back £100,000, and he has a loss of £7,000, which he has to write off because the Torah says he's not allowed to do it. The same way, unfortunately, we suffer other losses when we're, not unfortunately, we suffer other losses because we're showing material mitzvahs, and that's part of Yiddishkeit, that's part of what we believe in. This is absolutely no difference. On the contrary, as we've learned the Gemara, a person whose malva beribis, nechosim is motetin, so a person who lends, charges interest, he loses his property, so he has to write this off as a business loss. I mean, I don't mean write it off from a tax point of view, I mean, this is a loss, which, and that's part and parcel. However, if the malva, the person who lent the money, can wait another year to get his money back, then we have a very simple solution. Right now, Reuven pays back £100,000 to Shimon. Then he can turn around to Shimon and say, listen here, if you want, you can invest with me, with a Heter Iska, into all my investments. Reuven is someone who has investments. Into all my investments for the next year at the rate of, we said we can, on a palga milva, palga bikodin, would allow up to 14-15%. So on a rate of 14-15%, you can invest with me the £100,000, which means at the end of the second year, I'll be returning to you £114,000 or £115,000. There's nothing wrong with that, because that's a regular iskin. So in the end of the day, it can come out that Shimon is the same as he should be, or maybe even better off. You might even end up with 1,000 more. But there's two separate things. You return the chayv because you have to pay back the chayv. The chayv is finished and gone. You're not mechuyev to take back this investment. There's no ischayvus whatsoever.
He loses on his investment the next year. He can't pay.
But as we mentioned, in the Shin Heter Iska, the way Heter Iska works is that he's not mechuyev to believe you that you lost in your investments. If you can prove it with edim and truth and everything else, that's a different story. But in a regular setup of a Heter Iska, so here we've created a situation through the halacha where it's not necessary that Shimon would have to lose any money, but again,
it's... Year.
Pardon?
Does it have to be another year?
No, I'll tell you why I said a year, because of the numbers in this case. We wouldn't allow more than 15% on a palgam over palgam for a year. So if, for example, it would be, if you do a kulip pikodin, you could do it in half a year, but that's already a separate point. Question? Pardon? The monthly Heter Iska payments. The monthly Heter Iska.
Reuven borrowed £100,000 in bank, gave it to Shimon.
No, doesn't help you at all. No, not at all. That's why I told you. I can't borrow money from you and pay your electricity bill direct. At the end of the day, I'm paying your chayv. You're my malva, I'm paying your chayv. Question number four. Yaakov has been asked by his grandson Menashe if he can put money into Yaakov's bank account, where he has a better interest rate, and the interest will be made by Yaakov. He'll pass the money on straight to his grandson. So he wants to put £1,000 into his bank account. He's not going to use the money, and the money's going to sit there in his bank account, and then at the end he's going to pass back the £1,000 with whatever percentage interest there is. Is this a problem or not? Now that also comes out from the Shum, which we've discussed. There's a very far-reaching nekuda of this, which is negeah, more negeah I'm saying than just this shayla. Now the halacha is like this. It depends whether the money is halachically seen as being lent to Yaakov, or that it's just a pikodin. Yaakov is just a shliach who's depositing it somewhere. Now, if Yaakov, now really the bottom line of this is only more apparent today than it was a few years ago. What would happen if Yaakov's bank would go bust? Right? And they only pay up to £50,000 per client. So let's say Yaakov has got his own £50,000 that he's going to get paid back, and this money won't get paid back. Would Yaakov legally, halachically, have to repay this £1,000 to his grandson? Now, to preempt this shaila, if when the grandson wants to give the £1,000 to Yaakov, Yaakov says to his grandson, I've got absolutely no problem, I'm happy to help you, but you should know, I accept no liability for this money whatsoever. This money I'm putting in the bank, whatever happens to it in the bank, if the bank collapses, whatever it is, that's got nothing to do with me, then it cannot be called a halvor. Yaakov is not using the money, he's keeping it in the bank. I mean, obviously not keeping those notes in the bank. He's keeping £1,000 in his account that he doesn't touch. He's not using the money. He's not mekabel achrayus on the money. It's not called the halvor. But if Yaakov would be achrayi, then there'd be more of a problem. Now, in this particular case, with the grandson and grandfather, it probably understood that the grandfather's not accepting liability. And if it isn't, then one should say so, and there's no problem. Where it does become more relevant is when one discusses professionals, particularly lawyers, with their client accounts. Why? Because their ba'etzim is exactly the same thing. Lawyers are holding money that belongs to their client in an account, and some of them are passing back the interest to their client. That's part of what clients expect. Money sitting there, sometimes the fortune of money sitting there for a period of time, they're expecting to get back the interest on their money. Now, here, I asked a number of lawyers, and all of them told me that they think they'd be liable if the bank would go bust. Now, if they think they would be liable if the bank would go bust, then there's a serious issue of ribis that needs to be addressed. Now, one lawyer told me, for this reason, he tells all his clients, I don't pay interest on the client account because there's a problem of ribis. Now, if his clients are happy with that, then fine. But the question is, now, I organized a somebody wrote off to the Law Society asking them what their opinion is, and they tied a punk faket. They said that we're not 100% sure, but in our opinion, the lawyer is not liable for this money if the bank goes bust. So is up the Law Society. So, the SM, again, one can preempt this problem. If every lawyer says when he takes the money from his client, that I do not accept liability if the bank goes bust, right? Which most clients are probably not going to have a problem with, because most of them probably don't even think that the lawyer is liable on this money. So if they say it from the beginning that I do not accept liability for this money, and the money goes into the client account, then I don't think there'll be a problem of the client receiving the interest that's made on their money. And finally, a question without an answer, because the question itself highlights how people keep failing to chap this nekuda of ribis. Somebody came to me with a Choshe Mishpat Shaila. And in the Shaila, it became apparent how people just missed this nekuda. The question basically, I'm going to miss out a large part of the Choshe Mishpat part of the question, but the question basically went along these lines. Reuven is not a man of great means. He's got £10,000 saved up. And he's looking to find some safe, secure investment he can invest this £10,000. Shimon comes along, and Shimon says, listen, I'm working on a property project, and you should invest your £10,000 with me. You'll make good returns, it's looking very good. Everything should be fine. So he sees that Reuven's a bit reluctant, and he knows nothing about property, even if he's not running the project, but he's worried that things might go bad, and he's going to lose all his money. So Shimon says to him, Shimon's a friend of his, he says, don't worry. Apart from Shimon's a shutuf in the company, he says, I personally guarantee your capital. And that means if anything, if the house, the property gets hit by a plane, don't worry, I will pay you back your capital. I won't pay you back the extra, but your capital I personally guarantee. Now what happened next is what was negiah to the Choshe Mishpat Shaila, but I'm going to leave that out. But this was how the Shaila started. Now what Reuven doesn't realize is that you've got a flawed setup from the beginning. There's a difference, a fundamental difference, which you've mentioned before, between a halvor and a iska. Halvor is when you lend £1,000 and you get back the same £1,000. It doesn't make a difference if the person you lent it to made a fortune with your money or lost a fortune with your money. In the end of the day, I'm lending him a straight £1,000, he has to return to me another £1,000. Iska, I invest in something, forget the heter iska, but regular iska, I invest in something, I invest £1,000, if the project doubles in value, I get back £2,000. If it halves in value, I get back £500. That is the definition of iska. I am a partner. Just like I want to get the revochim, I also have to get the hefsedim. So therefore, when Reuven allows Shimon, who's a partner in the company, if Shimon would be nothing to do with the company, he's a third party who happens to underwrite it, then he's an oriv. Oriv is a separate shaila how it works. When it works, if you're only an oriv on capital and not an oriv on ribis, there's no problem whatsoever. However, in this instance, because Shimon is a partner in the business. He's a director of the company. He's part and parcel of the running of this company. So basically, Reuven is investing in Shimon. Now, if when you invest in Shimon, Shimon tells you, and don't worry, I'm going to guarantee, to personally guarantee, to repay your capital, then really what by definition has happened is Reuven has only lent the money to Shimon. Now that means this property project can be extremely matzliach, right? And all the Shimon will be allowed to repay to Reuven will be £10,000. Because even though they're setting up a... In other words, what you need to happen is that Shimon says, from now on I'm no longer achroi, and then one can work it back into iska. But this setup of investing money and the person you're investing with guaranteeing the money, on the contrary, what it makes it is a halvor, and therefore if you don't realize that, and when you repay the money, you repay it with the profits, quote unquote, which have been made, then really what in fact you're doing is your Avon Ribis. Shkoyach.